This episode of the Off Course Podcast is brought to you by Club Champion. Whether you're looking to find the perfect driver or the entire bag, connecting with the club fitting expert at Club Champion will put you in the best possible combination of head and shaft to maximize your swing potential. They are so confident they even guarantee your fit. If you're anything like me, you'll enjoy every second and find out more than you can ever ask about your swing. Visit www.clubchampion.com to learn more.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is the, you look like Tampa Bay Thunder down there listening to what's going on outside. It's JV, the head of the Tampa Bay and Florida fan base, and also the head of THP, if you will. What's up, buddy?
I mean, I don't even live in Tampa.
Yeah, but you're a fan.
Of their hockey team and baseball team, maybe. Not football so much.
not so much their baseball team right now.
Yeah, true. No, not much is going on. I mean, lots going on, but not much.
So you've been home for a little bit, which is kind of weird for you. You've had a crazy 2024 to this point. Has it been fun?
Yeah. Well, half of it has. I gotten to get out and meet a bunch of THPers. I had the crazy elbow issue that prevented me from playing a lot of golf. And I'm going to do a PSA, Dan, for everybody who's listening to this who doesn't know the story. But I was playing golf in San Antonio with Dan and the rest of the staff at our annual staff retreat. And I got a cut on my elbow, and I wiped that cut with my glove, which clearly had some sort of chemicals on it or whatever else is found on a golf course, and got a crazy infection. Elbow swelled up to the size of almost a bowling ball by the time I got home, out of commission for almost a month and a half of playing or really doing anything. So don't do that. If you get a cut, just cover it.
Yeah, and let's be clear, is inadvertently wiped it. You don't have like a thing for wiping cuts with your glove hand, right?
No, it was inadvertent. It was like habit. You see something and you just wipe it off, and you know, right. That's kind of how it happens. But yeah, ended up with a MRSA infection. I remember going, I was in a hotel in San Antonio, and my wife convinced me to do one of those urgent care telehealth doc things. So I get on the telehealth and the doctor says, oh, yeah, no, you should go to the emergency room. I can't help you. And I said, oh, okay. So this is a little more serious than I thought it was. And you know, there we are.
And then, of course, naturally, you named it after me, which is,
well, yeah, it just seemed fitting.
Jeez. But other than that, like you've played quite a bit of golf despite it. You missed a couple, yeah, which is unfortunate, obviously. You forced me to go to an event where I couldn't play, and it was one of the more painful experiences of my life because it was a cool place we went. But for you, getting to play all these really great dormy courses, how has that been for 2024? Have you really found love for a single one, or are they just all really growing on you, or have you lost some luster on a couple of them?
You know, I always leave one of the properties saying, oh man, this is moving up in the rankings, like every time. I still think Victoria National is probably my favorite golf course in the network. It might be my favorite golf course in the country. I just love the property so much. But at our experiences, and I don't want to turn this into like a sales thing for our events, but at our experiences, there's more than just the golf, you know, the food, the level of service, the accommodations. So I kind of view that all together as one. And we've been fortunate. We had one at Victoria National where all eight people were in the same cottage. Obviously, everybody had their own rooms. But in the middle of it, in the living room, they had a golden tee machine, shuffleboard, the whole nine yards. That was really cool. We did dinner there one night. Everybody kind of got together and played some golden tee over some cocktails and stuff like that. And then we had another one similar to that at Hidden Creek in New Jersey with ShotScope, where we also had the golden tee machine inside our cottage. And people got together and did that for a little bit as Gavin from ShotScope kind of discussed how data can help you. The more I dive into it, the more I realize how much he was right.
You know, I didn't have this on my list, and not surprisingly, we're going to have to talk about it. I'm at a really weird crossroad right now where I see all the benefits the THPers are talking about tracking your data and what you gain from having that information. Doing a little testing right now, which is super fun. I haven't usually been a part of that with random stuff. I can't really describe it all, and a website won't tell us information on, so that's been exciting. What I don't have is the ability to track actual numbers. So I can say generously what around my distances are, but I can't really track that. Now with something like ShotScope, it's quite easy to do. You just, you know, you hit it and then you hit your next shot and then that information's tracked for you. I want you to put me on blast right now because I need to be kicked over the edge. How stupid am I for not tracking data in 2024?
There's a lot to unpack with this one, and I'm going to take two steps. So if I forget in my older age to go back to the what you're testing thing, remind me after I talk about the data.
Okay.
So when we started working with ShotScope 5 years ago or so, I was interested. I'll do finger quotes since your show's on video now. From a standpoint of I like technology. I'm always like gadget guy kind of thing like that. Unlike others who are a Luddite and, you know, prefer no technology, I kind of like it. Started using it with the V3 and liked it. You know, I won't say I'm the guy who dives in after every round to check everything out. I make sure the shots are correct. There's usually one or two edits I have to do, and then I move on. Where I like it are two things that I never expected to like it. One is the equipment side of it. I had somebody ask me before I started with the V3, what is my most and least used club in my bag, taking the driver and putter out of the equation? And I said my most was fill in the blank club, and my least was a 56 degree wedge. Turned out that was the most used wedge I used. So it allowed me to work with that and find out how well I did with it. But what I like about data with at least ShotScope, first of all, I was an Arcos user before that. The subscription model just, it rots. Go away with that. I'm not trying to offend Arcos. They seem to do a decent job. I just, if you're charging people a subscription rate plus on top of the device and not really offering something that the other company doesn't offer, I struggle with that. But ShotScope has no subscription rate. It's a one-time purchase. And again, not meaning to sound salesy, I don't get paid if you buy a watch. But it's so easy. You just put the watch on. And I was a person who also was adamant that I couldn't use a watch while playing. After one round, I didn't even notice it.
To backtrack just a little bit, you mentioned ShotScope 5 years ago. We've seen the progression of ShotScope. And back when I was writing reviews for the THP homepage, I actually had one of the original units, which obviously they've improved on immensely since then, to the point where now they have, you know, visuals of the golf course on your watch. You have options as to what you want to use. You have, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, you have a way to auto putt, so you don't even have to worry about tracking where the hole is, things like that.
You can do auto or manual with putting. But what I found more than anything, and early on you had to do a few different things differently, you know, making sure that it was right. I just grabbed the club, put it next to my wrist, walk up, and swing. It misses maybe one or two shots an entire round. It's so easy. But then the dashboard I get afterward to look, and I'm not one of those guys who analyzes it after each round. I go back, you know, once every month or so, or if I'm on the road for a month, I might sit down in a hotel room and take a look, and you're like, oh shit, this guy sucks. But then you dive in a little deeper and you're like, oh, well, maybe I don't suck as bad as I thought. I really suck at this. And last time I was on the show, we kind of talked about getting better, and the elbow sidetracked that a little bit and actually made it worse because I had to kind of go back to the beginning. But to be able to go to my teacher and then say, hey, my data's right here, and it says I suck at this. Let's work on it. And we did. And I think that that part's pretty cool. And if you don't want to go get lessons, don't go get lessons. But you could see it yourself. Like, it is plain as day. Hey, you know, compared to a scratch golfer, you do this, this, this well. Oh, and by the way, you putt like a blind person. So, you know, that part I really like. And I think that if you use it to the point where it's not paralyzing, I think you'd be surprised how much you like it.
Yeah, I think I always really struggle to get over the hump, and it includes any type of tracking software that I've used. It's such a mental investment to accept that it's one shot out of many that you'll have with that club. And while it might matter right now, you don't have to go and stare at it later and think about it. It will eventually, you know, disappear into the collection of shots you've had with that club. I think that's been my biggest challenge. But I'm too fascinated in the actual tracking aspect to continue to ignore it, I think.
Well, I mean, we could give it a test. We could put a watch on you where you had to play it every round and then do another show in a couple of months and discuss it.
And just see how emotional I am or how satisfied I am.
I think you'd be surprised, because the part you just thought of that you mentioned is something that I talked to somebody else about. And I won't say their name, but it rhymes with Chris Voschall, where when you hit a bad shot, like, it's paralyzing, like you lose sleep over it. He's that type of golfer. He's analytical about it. And I respect that so much. He's not a person that he doesn't think this would ever work for. But when you step back and think about it, and I can now with a lot of stats, and some of the guys on the forum can with so many shots in there, the bad shots melt away.
Right.
You don't even notice it.
You know, it's funny because one of the comparisons I've used in my head to justify not using it is, well, if I'm hitting a 7-iron, I have a fairway lie, a rough lie, and a bunker lie. Naturally, those results will be different. And then, of course, where the wind is. But what I'm ignoring is I also hit it off the tee, off a tee, with the wind on a very specific hole. And it's like, okay, there is definitely a balancing act that will exist there. And just stop overanalyzing before you even have data to analyze.
Yeah, and what you're going to find, one of the things that it showed me was, out of a rough lie, I hit the ball much further than I do out of a fairway lie, which I think most people might get a little backwards, but those are flyer lies. You know, you're going to get a reduction of spin, assuming you can make clean contact.
Mm-hmm.
And I've loved it once you get past the initial, oh, four rounds in, it says I really suck with a 5-iron because I hit two poor ones, let's say. Once you're 20 to 30 rounds in, it all normalizes.
Well, I'll tell you what, we always have a thread on THP to discuss this, the conversations we have on each show. I demand a call to action from anyone who is a big ShotScope user out there who thinks that this is something I really need to put in play. And if I do, I'll give it a couple of months, of course. And, you know, who knows? Maybe it redefines my perspective as they continue to evolve into a better process. That'd be a lot of fun.
If you would have asked me last year, the best part of my game and the worst part of my game, the best part would be in and around the green, 20 yards and in. And the worst part of my game would have been off the tee. And the data says it's exactly the opposite.
I would say that I'd love to do that, but I'm pretty sure I already know that off the tee is my worst part of my game right now.
We're coming around.
Let's bounce back to the other thing we had talked about, that we're actually testing something right now, which is a super fascinating product. Our buddy Danny Lee over at UST Mamiya is having way too much fun with the THP staff right now.
Mamiya,
that's what I said.
Okay, it just sounded funny.
Did my Canadian come out?
I think so.
Uh-oh. Anyways, we have two shafts in play. James and I talked a little bit about it on our last show, that we just genuinely have no idea, other than we've got a little bit of a hint based on the fact that when you lean on it, it feels like
a pool noodle.
But then when you hit it, it feels pretty freaking good.
Yeah.
it's hard.
Very bizarre. You know, every time somebody tests a shaft, what's the first thing they do?
Oh, they waggle it.
Yeah. And when you waggle this thing, it is like eating a bowl of ramen. It's just all over the place. And a couple people, Jeremy has put a quick video up in slow motion, and it's just wild looking. But the truth of the matter is that doesn't necessarily dictate what's going to happen with the shaft. Now, I've been playing the version one of this shaft for about a year now. You guys had all had a chance to try it out at the range when we were at Briggs Ranch together. And some people were kind of fascinated with it. Some people were kind of scared of it. But it's a weird sensation. It's almost like picking up an orange whip and then swinging with it. Except when you actually go to swing it, it's not like that at all. You would think you would lose the ball all over the place, and that doesn't really happen. Or there would be crazy high spin, that doesn't really happen. And some people compared it to an auto flex. It's very different from that. An auto flex is a very high torque shaft. It's kind of all over the place. That's why a lot of people struggle with the control of it, because while torque doesn't impact that, in my opinion, it does impact feel a lot. The golfer, meaning us, will kind of alter their swing to keep up with that feel. This one, you don't have to do that. There's no alteration of your swing to keep up with it. The body naturally does a little bit of that here and there. But that's why I always said, first of all, this shaft would be very hard to sell in its current state. I don't know how it would be marketed correctly, because my shaft, as far as I know it, and I'm going to use general terms based on the prototype code, it's very stiff in the hands, pretty darn stiff in the tip, and then it's legitimately ladies flex in the middle of the shaft. It has the L written right on there in the prototype code. Now, there's not one of us that would pick that up and play it if that's what we were going by. And that's where I think flex in general is kind of a mind-bending thing, because you could pick up 10 stiff shafts and they're all going to feel differently. But the fact that it's holding up to speeds, you're a pretty high swing speed guy. Jeremy is as well. James is as well. I'm not. It holds up to pretty much all swings, and we're all playing the exact same flex, which, by the way, none of us know what it is.
Yeah. We've not been invited that information yet. I was on track, man, a couple weeks ago. I was up to about 115.
Wait, were you on track, man, or were you on a track, man?
I was on a device that, okay. Tracks golf sure shots from Trackman. Okay. I'm really getting heckled today on this vernacular. I don't know. Enunciation. You absolute bully. So anyways, I was at 115 was the last track number when I was going after a driver pretty hard. I have put it, and I want your perspective on this too, because what part of fun about going to THP events is you happen to have this shaft in play a lot of them, and people are curious, so they inevitably hit it, especially at some of these events you've done with Danny where guys go and get fit. So I've had it in the hands of, I would say, over 10 golfers at this point just this past weekend, and the reaction has been hilarious. It's
full stop for a second. When they first pick it up, every person hated it, correct?
So by the time the third person had picked it up and moved it around, I told the next five people, don't flex it, don't bend it, don't swing it until you hit the club. Don't even lean on the ground with it, just swing it. Trying to eliminate some of that crazy perspective. And what I was more fascinated about than their reaction, I think there's a tendency for golfers to have a perspective based on the way it loads. And when there is a loading sensation and they come from a shaft that might be a hair stiffer than they should play, they would argue that it's late in the delivery, but really it's just the shaft actually loading for a change. What I was more surprised about that you can't present perspective on, it's just the natural reality, was the fact that the guys who generally need spin and generally need launch, it was crazy how much the ball just sort of fell out of the sky. It was the more powerful swingers with the more powerful moves that really got performance gains from this driver head or driver shaft, which was crazy to me.
Cause in your head, it should be the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Like yeah. I was switching out in the range. I hit like 200 drives on the range on the weekend, cause I was so baffled by it. Listen, it hurt. Okay. I'm not going to lie. I'm getting old too. It hurt, but I had to do it cause I was so fascinated by the experience. So I'm going between V1, V2, and then a traditional, as I shake the mics or the camera stand here, all these different shafts, and then a traditionally extra stiff shaft, and the presentation alone was just wild. But when it came down to actually making contact with the ball, there was no definitively different result from a flight perspective other than just good quality shots.
Yeah. You know, when Danny first handed it to me, it was in his driver, and I said, what is this, a training aid? Like, that's what I thought it was. And, you know, Danny's a pretty high swing speed guy, and he puts it out there quite a bit. And I'm watching him hit it, and he's like, just trust me, this shaft is for you. It I don't want to say any shaft ever can help somebody who's steep or over the top or things like that. But for me, as a golfer who's over the top and battled that most of his career, my miss, a lot of people who are over the top miss that high right, you know, where you kind of, it's a glancing blow at it. Mine is a pull. And I got pretty decent with it to where you just set up and you play it, you know, drop your front foot, whatever you have to do. But it kind of eliminated that for me because there's obviously some sort of lag, whether that's in my hands or the club head coming through. But then I watch somebody fast swing it and there's none of that.
Just, and it's insane.
I told him, I said, why are you not bringing this to market? And the response is, how? Like, right. How in the world are you going to get somebody to pick this up and purchase it? If it's in a driver head, they're going to waggle it and say, no way. It would be through fitting only. And you have to convince fitters to want to put something in this when their person's going to have that same kind of thing. So I'm hopeful that it does come to market at some point, even if it's a limited edition direct to consumer only. You know, maybe it's our audience, maybe it's other audiences that find it like we did. But I think there's something there because I've never seen a shaft work in the exact same flex, exact same weight for this large curve of golfers.
So you make a great point, and this is a discussion I was having with a regular playing partner this weekend, talking about like how could you possibly put this in the hand of a golfer with no education included in the discussion point other than go swing this, and they swing it like this is a pool noodle, I want nothing to do with it, and they would totally ignore the results. And let me add another one. It was staggering everywhere other than the actual swing, putting this up against a traditionally extra stiff shaft because of everything that has to do with it other than the golf swing. The head's moving around as I, you know, pre-shot routine, since we all do that. As I lay it on the ground, you can see a little bend. It's just so fundamentally different. So if you go to, let's say, a club champion who has, you know, a myriad of options, you can't just put this in line with other shafts that would perform similarly, because it would be so fundamentally different in the hands that it's almost getting downgraded right at that perspective level before you even get to swing it. But I want to add a little bit to that as well. How do you flex this thing? What would you, how could you possibly come out and say, well, this is this flex, and then people go and move it around or try it, and they're like, no, it's not.
Yeah, that would be an interesting thing. You know what's funny? I have this driver shaft in four versions, all with different shaft adapters. So depending on what head I'm using, I can play it. And they're sitting directly next to my workbench in the tech studio, which if people are watching on video, it's like right behind this wall. Sitting on that workbench is a CPM machine, and I've never once put it on there to see what it, and I can't even tell you why. Like, there's no reason other than the fact that it works.
Yeah.
For me. I want to be clear. I don't think this is a shaft that'll work for everybody.
Well, I've seen that firsthand, and I'm sure you have as well.
Yeah.
Having gone through the different types of golfers who've hit it. What I think is interesting is, could this be one of the really first golf shafts that have come out and be defined more as a profile than a flex? You know, awesome. So because obviously you can go to extremes and you can take the ladies to a senior, or you can take the X to a stiff and maintain that L in the middle. Like there obviously can be different iterations of this that aren't as pronounced as maybe what we have or close to what we have.
There are. So I can tell you that I actually tested one that was slightly stiffer in the middle. And I don't mean like it's going to stiff or X stiff, slightly stiffer.
Okay.
And I did not have the same success with it I have with this one.
So it's interesting, right? Like, let's say you wanted to go a little softer in every facet. Maybe you don't call it, you know, X or S. You just simply name it something different, or yeah, have a different color convention or code or something like that. There would have to be a different way to define these that doesn't simply land on flex to promote what the actual conditions of the shaft are.
I'll ask your audience, and you can kind of dive into this as well when it comes out. But let's say this shaft came out direct to consumer only, no flex codes. They called it UST Mamiya Speed. okay, for whatever you want to call it. I don't care. Soft, speed, hard, whatever. It can be called off course. If you were to buy a golf shaft based on this, the conversation, whatever else it is, and it were done with no flex rating, but maybe something else, you know, whether it's, hey, this one is, I don't like
a triangle, a circle, a square.
Yeah, this could be, yeah, you could have a square, a circle, and a triangle, let's say. Does that work for people? Would they be interested? I'm very curious how what people say would be the way to put this shaft to market.
It's kind of
and
feels
by the
like,
way, I've never discussed this with US Team EMEA. Maybe they're already going to be making it, but I've never discussed, hey, how do you market this?
This is going to go about as well as putting the lofts on irons.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're right. What shaft is that? Oh, I have the US Team EMEA Speed with a triangle.
Man, I don't know. I think it's fun and it's exciting because we've obviously had a busy year in 2024. And not to say that products aren't revolutionizing the way that, that golf is being played, because it absolutely has been. We've talked about it on the channel plenty, I guess, on the podcast, on the channel, whatever you want to call it. But this is one of those things that just kind of goes out of the norm of their category. And I think takes it a step further to say, you know, maybe it's not always this equation that that balances out and performs for you. Maybe we need to start thinking in different ways to absolutely refine your golf swing from driver head to handle.
Maybe. And maybe that's, you know, I've put this out there before. There was a tech podcast years ago where they took iPhone users and gave them Androids and Android users and gave them iPhones. And they kind of did it. And I always said, how cool would it be to do that version of golf? Like blade users had to use mallets and, you know, players' cavities had to use game improvement irons and so on and so forth. And it was more than that, hit five balls on the range and then be like, nope, don't like the offset. Because, you know, everybody's eyes and bodies adjust. I watched you play with Cleveland Altitudes years ago and go two under through three holes using nothing but a five iron. So, like, your mind and your body adjust, even though you might have a preference in your head that says, I only like this with no offset, or I only like a lot of offset. But if you have to use it for multiple rounds, you usually get used to it. And that's how you adapt and things like that. So I always wondered, is a shaft like this the gateway to that, where it opens up ideas for other people, or is it the exact opposite? Like, nope, want no part of that. If US Team EMEA launched the Speed Triangle tomorrow at $150, I'm making up an arbitrary price, how many people would run out and get it without ever trying it or only hitting it on the range at one of my events? You got 50 people maybe who go and run and do that? Because it certainly can't be in a store. A store would never be able to sell these.
Right. Speaking of those, I actually just had a conversation about those ridiculous irons the other day with, what was it, Kusala? Or you had some Miyazaki shafts in them.
I don't remember what the model was.
Maybe? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Anyways, yeah, I think it's an interesting concept for sure. I think it's eye-opening, and it's sort of glass-shattering in a lot of ways from what our perspectives traditionally are. I do want to ask you this question, since you and Danny seem to enjoy breaking each other's minds a little bit. Let's say he shows up to the next event and hands you a set of irons that have the same graphics and the same same proto markers on them. Do they go in and do you freak out or what?
No, I mean, I've played with Danny a lot and he knows my game pretty well, so I would trust him there. But we've discussed that, and it's not the same. Sorry about hitting the mic there. It's not the same with irons as it is for a driver shaft or a fairway shaft, because there's a level of precision that you want the swing to go through when you're in the scoring club. So he doesn't think it's necessarily right. With that said, he's a firm believer in going as light as you possibly can. I know that breaks golfers' minds because they don't like change all that much. And he's also a firm believer in going the softest flex you possibly can, without losing anything. So I think there's something to that. He actually played around recently with senior flex shafts of the Recoil Dart line and shot under par, I believe.
Well, he's an animal, so it makes sense. But
yeah. but yeah, so I don't know if that would be done for irons, but I'd certainly hit them. They feel it. I mean, you admit it. Like, once you get past the, you know, the first couple holes where you're like, oh, I'm swinging an orange whip, you get used to it and you kind of crave hitting it because it's unlike what you've done before.
And we really need to throw this disclaimer out there because, like, you know, 30 or 40 people have hit this at this point.
Yeah.
It doesn't swing like an orange whip. It no. waggles like an orange whip.
Correct.
swings like every other shaft you've ever swung in your flex code.
We wouldn't be going that deep on this if it was just the five or six of us hitting it and enjoying it. Like we said, there's 40 or 50 people who have hit this now at our different events, and it's nearly unanimous how many people like it. Now, it wasn't the best fit for everybody, but how many people like it? So there is right. that.
Well, I'll tell you, I have an incredibly picky fellow golfer who I play with every weekend. He's got old blade irons, very predictable setup. What's that?
Gross.
You'll be fine. He's got a pretty good move. But he hit the V2 twice, and I said, hey, I've got two of these. Do you want to plug the other one into your driver? He's like, yeah, sure. So I pull it out of my bag. He's like, oh, you've got it here. And within 5 seconds, he had already put it into his gamer driver. And it's actually in his trunk somewhere at this point. I demanded it back. But that's to the level of shock. And he's more than likely has a more powerful move than I do, which is crazy.
I actually had a fellow hit it at Ballyhack Golf Club who he's not there now, but he was the first assistant. He puts a big move on the ball and he plugged it in and his first comment was, oh shit, my driver's inferior to this one. He was using a series old driver from a brand I won't mention. And then he hit it and he's just like, what in the world is happening? But it was frozen ropes dead on a line to the back of the range. And he asked if he could have it. And I said no, because it's not like I have a closet full of these. I have my four. And they're not going anywhere.
Right. Well, I'm glad we got to break that down a little bit. If you guys are curious, those listening in, we do have a thread on THP right now that's going in wildly in depth of the testing. The entirety of the THP staff are in there testing it in their own ways, sharing their experiences. Hopefully they're doing the same thing I do and letting anyone around them try it, because you get this, you know, crazy reaction every time, good or bad. So if you're curious to read more about that, definitely go check that out. And we'll see what comes of this shaft. Who knows, man?
Yeah. I want the speed triangle badly now.
Yeah. I think we could probably figure out a better name. What about, no. Yeah, speed trapezoid. That's what you need. We need to tie it into hockey a bit.
That does Anyways. Work, seeing that my team are champions.
Settle down. So
it loses again.
There is.
Sorry.
There's one thing I really feel like needs to be discussed. We see a lot of it, and it's demoralizing.
Worth following it on audio, Dan got very serious all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, I was either going to go off course on a totally another sport for like way too long, or I was going to jump into the next segment. And I opted for peacefulness today, which is fine. So I want to talk about fighting misinformation, because whether you're sitting at the bar after a round of golf, whether you're on the range hearing the person two bays down talking about something, whether you're on the internet, It seems like people found a way to sort of weaponize what knowledge they think they have and don't really think about the consequences they're creating for other people. I'd love your perspective on it, because I'm more of a casual observer of it. When it comes to my circle, I usually step in and provide clarity where I can. And it's not my perspective. It's just information, and then tell them to go do their research. But you've been doing this for a long time now. You've seen it thousands of times. What are your thoughts on the amount of misinformation that's out there and how damning it can be for a golfer?
It hurts me at my core, and I say that legitimately, but I've learned to temper that. For the first 5 or 6 years of THP, man, it would legitimately hurt me, because there's a large amount of information there, and the internet is great at that. But if you have an audience, be it as a forum member, social media poster, YouTuber, whatever they call those now, golf enthusiast with a large circle in your club or whatever else, and you have influence in any way whatsoever, and you're making shit up or giving out the wrong information for whatever reason you are, F off. Like, that's horrible. Golf is an expensive sport, and using something to better yourself, knowing that the information is incorrect, is horrible. And I struggle with that so much.
So there is obviously a monetary benefit to some folks who have a big following, whether it's, you know, Instagram, TikTok,
it's not always just monetary though, Dan. It's YouTube. Also the wannabe influencers.
Let me stack that a little bit, because I can understand the drive there when you are getting some sort of monetary gain. What's fascinating to me is there are also these mediums where regular golfers who might not necessarily have the most accurate information are absolutely pushing it to whomever will listen. And I'm sort of at a loss. Is it an element of satisfaction that comes with being the loudest person in the room? What do you think drives these folks to not necessarily be right, but be loud?
Insecurity, maybe. I don't know. I'm definitely not the therapist, and I'm not nice enough to do those things. I don't know. I think that, like, so if you go to other avenues of the world, you know me, Dan, I'm a big fitness buff.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. And they have a thing called bro science that they call it, when people are like looking at ingredients and 100% saying something along the lines of, well, this is, Dan's cracking up and on mute now because
he called himself a fitness buff.
Yeah. So bro science is a real thing. And I think that's the same with golf equipment stuff. Is Dan's making me laugh now. I have enough information to be dangerous. And there's something to that. But like I said, for years, it hurt me to its core. I've learned to temper it a little bit and just like, listen, it is what it is. I'm not going to try to set people right. It's my job to make sure they get really good information. If they choose to ignore that and listen to some dude hitting his garage because he heard from a guy whose brother's sister, father's cousin worked in an engineering room, maybe at possibly a golf company, but they also make pickleball shoes, that this is what's happening, fine, go have at it. Like, it's just, I went through to a fitting center recently, and I won't say which one, but watching the information, it's part of a retailer, not necessarily a fitting center, I should say. Watching the information given to this golfer when it was clear that this fitter was just giving information based on what he likes versus what was beneficial. I wanted to walk in there, just grab the club and say, dude, you're wasting your money. Stop listening to this guy. You were getting bad information. But that's not my job, and you can't let it beat yourself up anymore. I just hope people search out for real information.
Do you think that this sort of cult following for some companies has almost propelled them in a way they don't deserve based on some of this?
I mean, places become cult followings usually for a reason. Now, some of the smaller companies do it in a financial way. The direct-to-consumer Iron Market comes to mind there. You know, we're the same as this with no pay for players, blah, 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 blah. So you get to save money. That's not really what's happening, but okay. The larger companies in some way, some point earned their following, be it tour usage, be it, you know, trial and error, everything else. So I don't have an answer for that. I'd be curious what the audience thinks of that.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I've always found so fascinating is there is a level of balance that exists in an online community where each post is each post. You can certainly react to it, but it doesn't like hold value in the way some platforms do, where
the sum of the parts might more.
Well, the most reacted to comment or the most watched or read comment goes to the top and everything else just sort of falls away. Whereas in a forum-based experience or a community-based experience, each post holds its place in line and you have to dig through to find it or react to the current conversation. And that's something I've always appreciated about THP is our community has their perspective and then the debate goes from there and is almost 99.9% friendly or at least reasonable.
I mean, if everybody got along and agreed on every little single thing, that would suck.
Yeah, but I guess the point is the difference, and maybe it's because I get most of my content or engagement from the forum, that there's a level of balance that exists there that's not enforced, but supported by the discussion. And I really struggle when the loudest, most obnoxious, or the most curious, whether or not accurate or not, piece of conversation becomes the highlight of the story. That's a real challenge for me.
I can understand that. I don't encounter that as much, obviously, because most of my time is dedicated to the THP forum, but I can understand that. Because if you go to other platforms, you're right, the one that has the most thumbs up or whatever does jump to the top and you have to click a button to see the rest. Like, F that nonsense. That's a lot of work.
Right. A lot of
I don't have any time.
Threads and threads.
Yeah. I don't know. Too much work.
Well, I don't want to destroy that conversation. Obviously, people have perspectives and they'll share it as well in the show discussion on the forum. But there's one other thing I thought was a really interesting conversation last week. I asked people what they thought their worst piece of swing advice they ever received was, and some of the feedback was really rough, like really unfortunate. You've seen a lot of different swings. You've seen a lot of people react to different swings.
I have a lot of different swings.
You used to refer to your own swing as trying to swing around a broken lawn chair or something like that.
No, it was a folding lawn chair.
A folding lawn chair, that's what it was. Yeah. Do you have a piece of advice that's really stuck in your head that was just horrible?
I have a lot of it. You know, I do think that people, I don't want to get in trouble here because I'm a firm believer in fixing mistakes. Bad things happen. Like, I had a golf swing that had decent tempo and at least I made a move at the ball too. As I've gotten older, I don't know what the hell's going on. So I'm working to fix that. But I also understand the swing of your swing. You know, you have a certain move that you're capable of doing with some subtle adjustments. Maybe it gets better. But some of the ones that I see people posting in there are crazy. The keep your head still one, keep your head down, those two things kind of sit hand in hand. I don't necessarily, people say that was the worst advice they've ever received. And the truth of the matter is I think people are looking at it literally rather than what's really happening. Like, those two things are not the same. But I also think a lot of the swing talk, you know, is tired and old-fashioned, where all the camera systems in the world have told us that, dude, your swing you're teaching is flawed. And you still got that, I'll call him a sky fister, the guy raising his fist to the sky screaming, not on my watch, it's still done this way. Well, yeah, go F yourself. You're 178 years old. And you're trying to teach a swing when every video camera in the world since the 80s from Service Merchandise has told us it's wrong. I don't know. I've had really bad swing advice, but I've also had really good swing advice. So I try to marry them, so to speak.
Sure.
What about you? What's the worst you've ever had?
I had a guy who really didn't like my flying right shoulder, or right elbow, I should say. In my backswing, it was actually one of the most fundamental components of my best golf swing. And they encouraged me to tuck it inside in a more traditional place and then drive it down to the ground. And that has created 5 or 6 years of absolute, pain, literal pain in my right arm, because what I was doing to sort of stop a long backswing and set at the top was crippled. And I would say that was incredibly negative for me.
Yeah. You know, it's funny too, because I relate that one that you got with the other idea, which is like your answer could have been, well, Freddie Couples has the flying elbow, you know, like it works for him. And it's the same thing when you say to somebody, like, why are you putting with your finger down the shaft? Well, Brooks Koepka does it. Well, when you putt like Brooks Koepka, put the finger down the shaft. You haven't gotten it to the hole yet, and you're missing 4 feet wide. I think that there's defense mechanism that we have holding us back, meaning me, not you or anybody else. But I once had a person tell me that the only way to learn a swing is with headphones on. And I said, explain this. He said, well, you can't have the outside elements or sound influence how you swing. What the fuck? What? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. How am I supposed to hear what you're telling me to do if I have headphones on?
Okay.
So that one was bad. I once had a person say that since you swing with your feet together and make a shift, you should always just do that. That was a good one. I've had a lot. It's so bad.
Well, part of the fun of that thread is, I think, I don't know, five posts in, someone made a comment about a golf swing and the flaws in it. And I reacted with a picture of Jim Furyk and the level of imperfection it took for him to get in the zone. But because I think one of the most interesting things I've ever seen was someone had posted a video about all these different swings. It was like a Matt Wolf. It was a dead on playing guy like Adam Scott. And then, you know, all these different swing videos go to the top, show all the differences. Then as they get halfway down and then through the zone, they're all in the exact same position. So everyone in reality, and this is one thing I talk about a lot with my buddies, is it doesn't matter how you get there, but you are stacking the odds against you every bad thing you do to start.
Correct.
Right.
And depending on your level, how good your hands are, you could get there with doing completely horrible things. So I'll use an example. So I read on the forum about, could you stop at the top?
Yeah, that was my thread too.
Okay. So could you stop at the top? Now, this is a great story. I'm not sure I've shared this, but I was in Las Vegas with Danny Lee, who we spoke about earlier, and Chris Foshaw from Mizuno Golf. And we were on the range, and Danny said he had watched a guy do this and liked it, so he started doing it. And we were like, what? And he didn't even take a backswing. He just started at the top.
Yeah.
And proceeded to hammer the ball. So Chris is like, I need to try this. And, you know, Chris is on the plus side of the handicap or right around scratch. And he tries it three or four times, like one whiff, three tops, maybe a shank. And he was so angry. But it became a thing. So now Danny, on the other hand, still to this day, he stopped that and everything else. To this day, he does a long pause at the top. You know, you say long pause, it's like a tenth of a second, like Hideki does. Danny's is almost 2 seconds at the top.
I was trying to like make a pause that was long enough to accommodate his back. So that's
about
horrible.
What it is.
I was incredibly uncomfortable for those 2 seconds on the show.
That's exactly what it is. He brings it up.
How?
And there's a pause, and then he comes down and he makes contact. And you're always looking at him like, what is happening?
But and then he hits it past you, and it's like, come on, man.
Yeah, by a lot. It is true. You know, from here to here, for the people watching on video, as you impact the ball are the only things that matter.
Yeah, it's about getting in the right place. And I think part of what some of these guys have done, and Furyk talked a lot about trying to go to a neutral swing in college and how it just genuinely didn't work. So he said, screw it, went back to it. And he found that zone in the zone that you need to be in. So the idea that you have to go the same plane as everyone else is insane. And I think that's part of that swing your swing mentality. It's just making sure you're in the right place at the right time. And I think a lot of people ignore that. They're so worried about what their hands are at the top or where their weight shift is at the top that they almost forget where it should be at contact.
So let me ask you a question. What is your favorite golf hole you've played in 2024?
Yeah, so, I mean, I can't fathom it not being on Victoria National based on the fact that that whole golf course knocked my socks off when I played it earlier this year. But I haven't really played a lot of other golf. I guess Briggs Ranch had some really cool spots, but hole to hole, I would say probably the 17th at Vic, just because it shows me a lot of different angles. Love hitting over the water. Love that you almost got that that Scottish experience going into the green. It was a weird setup that I really liked.
The whole final back nine of that course is something else, but is that the best course you've ever played?
So I can definitively say it's in my top three. I've been asked.
Is that
this.
The pause at the top awkwardness?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's one of those things where like, I think it's incredibly challenging to really decide like this is absolutely 100% the golf course, but there's, you know, easily in the top three.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend about that, and we were talking about it's very hard for me to say it's not. I love the Clive at the Hideaway. It's so picturesque, and every hole is a postcard. But when it comes to actually playing the golf course, it's hard for me not to say it's my favorite golf course there is.
Yeah, I think the challenge that I have when I experience different golf courses, and I'll give you a couple examples to make it easier, is you can almost get uprooted from the actual playing experience based on what you're seeing. So Clive's a really nice example, even though I love the layout there. Hag Point, I thought, was a really interesting example because it was so different from what I was familiar to. Like the presentation, the location, and some of the holes basically falling into the water really set the tone there. I've always loved River's Edge in North Myrtle for some reason, and True Blue. Another really good one I thought about was it was called the Conservatory, right? At Hammock. That was, yeah. I mean, listen, I'll admit the first couple holes were pretty foggy after a Villa crawl, but that was a beautifully designed, incredible layout. Like, there are just little moments in time where you just sit back and think, like, man, this is a really cool experience based on where I am, based on the layout. And it's hard to not fall in love for different reasons.
Yeah, I totally get that. I always relate everything back to more than the golf course, but that course specifically always comes back to me. For those that don't know, there's a little bit of editing going on previously because I had a power outage and Dan was left standing there looking around like, what the hell is going on?
It was pretty funny, yeah. Okay, so let me add another element to Vic that I thought was really interesting. Did you know, and of course you probably did, but one thing we notice is you can't see a single cart path when you look down any hole there. That's the weirdest thing I've ever experienced. We weren't really paying attention, and then we played the front nine for a second time and realized you genuinely can't.
No, you can see maybe a little sliver if you know where to look, but that's about it. Hole two is a perfect example of that. It's a really short par four. Some would call it drivable. I wouldn't. There's trouble everywhere, and the fairway's like 18 feet wide. One of my favorite holes on the course. And when you hit it out there, you're like, well, I think it's good, you know, and yet you see the whole hole in front of you. You just don't really know.
Right. Well, yeah. It's funny you say that, cause I think three is probably one of the most underrated par fives I've ever played. It's brutal. If you hit it wrong off the tee, it's brutal. If you hit it wrong into the green, and it's crazy if you hit it right for two shots, how close you can get to a green you can't see.
Yeah, if you hit it right for two shots, you can definitely get home there, assuming you're playing the proper tees. But even if you can't, you can be a shorter hitter and navigate that one. You know, you slap one out of the fairway, you hit something else, maybe 180 up. You're going to have a scoring iron into a green. And from that point, you're probably going to be able to see the green.
I was going to say, if you're far enough left, yeah. I actually had a buddy who hit it right off the tee out of the decision by the line that the caddy gave him. Then he hit it left from there through into the bush and then obviously lost his ball. So he was pretty unhappy. And then he played it again and had a birdie putt after just bouncing it over the green on his second shot. And he goes, that went from my least favorite par five in Indiana to my favorite par five in two plays.
Yeah, it's really there's so many great holes out there. And that's why it always comes back to, it might be my favorite course there is. It's hard to say like you definitively, but it's got to be up there.
Yeah. I want to ask you one more question before we wrap today, even though I have no idea how long we've been going for this at this point.
That's what power does.
So I was wearing my Briggs Ranch golf shirt the other day. The logo on there is obviously really cool. I think they did an awesome job applying it to the locale. And he's like, man, I think that's my favorite logo in the network. And I'm like, honestly, I hated it at first, and then you get there and you experience it like, this is absolutely perfect for it. So as much as I want to ask you what your favorite Dormy logo is, I want to expand that to everything. How make or break is a logo to you?
It's huge, and it's kind of weird. I was just talking to Morgan, my wife, about this, that, you know, when you look at courses to join and things like that, how trivial that is and yet how important it is. I openly stated, I think my favorite logo in the network is Hidden Creek. It's just that lone tree. I just love the way it looks and presents to on all different goods. but it's also the least favorite of a lot of people there. Whereas the one I'm wearing right now, for those watching the video, is Ballyhack with the goat on top of Virginia. I happen to like that one too. But a good logo is so underrated, especially if it's a course you're visiting or it's your home course. I don't mean that for your local, hey, I play five different courses in a rotation in a public setting in my hometown. It's not as important there. Yeah. But when it's something you're visiting, bucket list, anything like that, I think it is so important because, you know, you stare at that flag stick, it might be on there. You have a drink at the turn, it might be there. You know, you see it and it's just, it's that instant memory.
No, I've got a pineapple with a Christmas hat on today for my logo from Travis Matthews. So that's interesting, but
different.
Settle down, Florida. But yeah, I think it's fun because you go to a place and here's what I think is challenging, because there's a lot of TPC golf courses out there that are awesome, but they're almost hindered by the logo.
I would agree. In fact, the one that's 10 minutes from my house, TPC Sawgrass, it's a terrible logo. It's just, it's not good.
Yeah.
I've played that course a lot and I'm humbled to do so. And you get to the 17th and no matter how many times you've played it, no matter how good of a golfer you are, you pucker a little bit, but you also take it all in.
Okay.
And I still don't have a single hat, shirt, or anything from that course.
It looors like everything else, right?
Yeah. Coeur d'Alene is simply the worst logo ever created for a bucket list course. It looks like it was made in Microsoft Paint in 93. But a good logo matters. And maybe we're crazy. Are we crazy or is everybody else crazy?
Well, if you ask my wife why I bought another shirt from another property, then yeah, I would argue I'm the crazy one. But listen, I think it's one of the most fun ways to represent where you've been and what you've played is to be able to wear the golf shirt of that property. And I want to circle back once more on the whole home course thing. I'm thrilled that I like my home course logo. They actually changed it up a little bit to have a singular O, or they have a couple of pine trees palm trees that look cool. Pine trees, palm trees.
Yeah, they're definitely not palm trees.
They're
Cincinnati.
Trees. Well, it is called the Oasis, so you never know. But the idea that there's a logo I actually like to represent from there is it's a big part of the conversation, I think, for sure.
Our club in Nashville had a great logo. They called it a golf and yacht club, which is hysterical because it's in Nashville and the waterway was a lake and a yacht was a pontoon boat. But it was cool. It had the anchor and it had a golf club going through the anchor and I really liked it. But that mattered. When we took a tour of the place, I walk in the pro shop and I was like, oh, okay, they have Travis Matthew, they have Puma, they have some Holderness and Bourne that I liked, and they all had a logo on it that I liked. We were looking at courses around Florida, and I came to this one, and this is a beautiful private facility that I won't name, but it's well out of my price range. And I look, and I'm like, really? That's the logo?
Really?
Yeah, you're charging $250,000 initiation and $35,000 a year in dues, and your logo is an orange?
You'd like, probably do something better in paint, yeah. That's always the problem.
Like, it's just, they need to hire our creative director and do a better job.
There
but
you
I don't
go.
Want to lose Jeremy. He's too talented.
Yeah, he's all right. We'll keep him for now.
Yeah, for now.
Well, hey, buddy, listen, I've always had a good time having you on, talking about the craziness that goes on in golf conversation. We had some good chats today. Anything you want to leave us with before we head out?
Yeah. We have a killer contest that you teased a little bit ago.
I thought you were going to say
right now.
I thought you were going to say buy a home generator.
Yeah, that's true. Ours kicked in right away. It's one of those big ones that does your whole house, so you don't even realize it. I'm like, why do we pay an electric bill? Just run it off natural gas. It's way better, but it doesn't really work that way. But we have a killer contest going on right now that you teased a couple of weeks ago when you had Nick Sherburn on, which was an awesome episode. If you guys haven't listened to that, that was killer. But we are giving away not just the fitting, but the entire bag of clubs you get fit for with Club Champion right now. And entering is literally like takes 2 seconds. Just go on there, tell them what you have in your bag, where the location closest to you is, and you got a chance to win. And we're going to announce the winner like later on next week.
That's crazy. I saw it up on the forum this morning talking about all the benefits to and how simple it is to join. And man, like, what better reason to just click on a couple links and be a part of something? You get
yeah,
a whole
like
bag you, fitting, you get a whole bag full of stuff. That's crazy. How did you manage to talk them into that?
So this was one of their ideas, and we've worked with them for a long time, but it was less about, hey, let's get people in for a fitting, and more about let's get them in for a fitting and get them their clubs. Obviously, it's to promote Club Champion. There's, you know, we're not here to deny it. But it's about somebody going through the process from beginning to end. So they get to schedule a fitting, they get to go through the full bag fitting, they get to get their clubs built, and then they get to use the clubs and share it. And we want them to be able to document that whole process along the way, because it's going to be a lot of fun for the lucky winner. I'd like to win.
That sounds insane. Yeah, I tried to talk Nick into just writing my name down before we're going to edit it out the other week, and he declined. So I guess we'll keep it open for everyone else, I guess.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I mean, maybe you could win. Maybe you could win. You could have to enter, but you could win.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
I mean, if you actually did win after we just said that on this podcast, things would be weird. So don't enter.
I didn't plan to, but man, it'd be funny. I'll put Cal through it. That's fine.
Yeah, there you go.
That'd be sweet. Well, hey, listen, thanks a lot. And for you folks along, if you are playing golf this weekend, have a great time. Make it count. And if you do
one more thing.
Okay.
If you're wondering why my background is blurred out, yes, it's because there's some pre-embargo stuff back there that's freaking awesome. Get ready.
The best part is right now, Florida's attacking your internet again, so it's like double blurry. So the pre-embargo stuff is very hidden. We'll have to get you back on talking about it when it's live.
Definitely.
All right, sounds good. Hey, again, if you guys get bad advice and you know it probably isn't the best thing, consult your local head pro if you have swing thoughts you need to resolve. Go on the internet and learn something if it's about a product you're curious about. There's a lot of good conversations to be had. Don't waste your money on someone's perspective when you know it's a little bit ridiculous. Either way, we'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.